our put-on concerned the upcoming Oz Film Festival, and although we never mentioned when or where it was going to be held, we promoted it through a series of in-studio interviews with alleged participants. On that night, November 17, 1966, over 50 years ago, Peter pretended to be film critic Peter Volta, who claimed to be writing a history of world cinema, one frame at a time. With my fluency in French, I chose to be filmmaker Jean-Claude Jean-Claude, who made the revolutionary docudrama 24 Hours with Fred. I follow my friend through all of his life in one day, I said with a heavy accent. When he go to the bathroom...
Did you know that Johnny Carson ate Cab Calloway's baby to stay slim?
Where did you hear that?
I read it in the toilet.
Curious people want to know.
Did you know there's a place just 6 feet under the earth where you go when you die?
Where did you pick that up?
I picked it up in the toilet.
Here's what you'll find in the toilet this week.
Princess Di gave birth to a 65-pound show horse.
John Kennedy's come back in a spaceship with a super new diet.
Bert is dating John Hinckley to make Warren jealous.
I'm sleeping with Joan Collins and I don't even know it.
Where did you read that?
In the toilet.
The National Toilet. Put a quarter in the slot and we'll wipe the world for you.
When he's sleeping, when he has breakfast.
Good morning. The makers of synthetic bread and Jack Poet Volkswagen bring you breakfast with the brunch. That's that 15 minutes of sunshine that puts another lump of sugar in your coffee and another lump of chuckle in your throat. Hey, here they come now. Dick and Jane. Brunt, that is.
Oh, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Dick. I can see here by the paper that, remember that teacher who was on trial for witchcraft?
It's upside down.
Well, she found her missing contact lens in her son's ear.
Can I have the fascist section?
Sure, honey. But be careful. But before we get into that, I think we ought to say a few words about Jack Poet Volkswagen.
He makes it all possible.
Makes it possible, Jane. Jack Poet, just, you know, he's a poet. He doesn't know it out there. And 5944 North Figueroa in Highland Park, he'll do everything for your car. He'll rent your car, he'll sell you a car, he'll fix your car.
Change your heads?
Anything that you want,
wonderful.
Honey. Where is that? Again, it's the Embassy to turn off.
5944 North Figueroa in Highland Park in
Pasadena,
New York City.
That's right. And get down there as soon as you can. Oh, Jane!
David Osman was the South American director of a thrown camera film who had just received a grant to drop a 70mm camera down the Andes. How did that come out? Asked Peter. Not too good, answered Dave in an excellent South American accent. The camera fell apart after it hit the first rock, so the film is very short.
I think that Mr. Zais has dumped more cameras.
Dumping a camera?
Well, it's a term that I think he created, actually.
Is the technique where, in my first film, which you have read there, the Falling Down, number one, the original Falling Down film, right, was when I decided that I no longer wished to be responsible for what my camera took pictures of. Now, there was only one way of doing this, and that was to let free of the camera. Now, there's only one way to do that and still take pictures. You got to wind up the camera and the whole thing. Then I simply, first of all, I started to throw it, just like a handball, you know, throw it back and forth.
Baseball's a game where most of the action is taken up with two guys playing catch while the rest watch intently, particularly the batter.
To who? Did you have another camera? Well, no, it's some friends. You know, we are at parties or something. I throw the camera back and forth. Now, this may sound a little funny, but what happened with this was the development of a technique finally where you could drop a camera long distances. And the Falling Down number one film was made by taking I use 8mm because they're very small. If they break, they don't cost me too much. You know?
They're practical, these new weird cats practical. Anyway.
You better believe that because it's very expensive. Anyway, I go out to the middle of the George Washington Bridge and I have a rope tied around the camera and it's little pontoons on the side so it won't sink. And I drop it over the side of the bridge all the way down, what is it, 298 feet or something like it.
That's all very interesting, but the sun is going down.
Oh, no, you're all confused. The horizon is moving up.
Hey, listen, come on, you guys, help me, please.
I know. Let's stand him on his head.
Here you go.
Hey, put me down.
Relax. Easy, boy.
Ah, you see? Now it's morning.
Oh!
Oh,
he's no fun. He fell right over.
Help me, I think I'm falling.
This is the pit. Holy baloney! That laser beam nearly made optical weenies out of me. I gotta get moving.
But this is what is important about us. You gotta give it a little spin to the camera. Now this means it's there, don't take pictures of the sky or of the water, but it takes pictures of everything all at the same time. So the first frame is, in that film, is the bottom of the bridge that is dropping 32 right. feet per second per second. Finally it goes down, hits the water, it sinks about 8 feet, and it shoots underwater. And we got pictures of the rubbish in the Hudson River and all of that. And there's the moment of stasis when it hits the water and stops the revolving motion.
Right.
And then it sinks a little ways. So there's that moment.
Beautiful film.
And it pops up to the top again. That's the end of the film.
Well, you say beautiful film.
I'm working on now a four-part trilogy film. Now, a trilogy, that may sound odd because three parts in a trilogy, but it's three screens. So it's a trilogy of images you have on the screen. And the whole thing is being achieved through the use of the I Ching.
I wrote Manhattan Castle with the I Ching.
You did?
Yeah. I've been sorry ever since. Because when it came time to resolve the novel at the end, the I Ching didn't know what to do. I mean, it got me through most of the book. Every time they cast a hexagram, I actually cast four of them and got something and assigned it to them, and they proceeded on the basis of the advice given. Like when Juliana Frank decides to tell Abidson that he's about to be off by a Zisher Heights D's agent, I threw the coins and she got, you know, warning, make known the truth of the court of the king, great danger, and so on. Someone comes up behind him and hits him with a club. That's what she got, and so that she did go warn Abidson. If she got another hexagram, I would not have had her go speak to Abidson.
Okay, kids, and we have another letter here from a happy birthday gum dropper in Sector R. It's a little Sally Chink. No, Ching. And she's 12 years old today. Well, that's wonderful, Sally. You're going to start menstruating soon, huh? Don't you think you ought to...
But then when it came time to close down the novel, Yi Jing had no more to say, so there's no real ending on it. I like to regard it as an open ending. You see, it will segue into a sequel sometime.
When you find somebody with a stomach to write one.
Yeah. Or if Yi Jing ever gets off its ass.
Do you go back from time to time and throw it to see if there is an ending to it, or?
No, I don't use Yi Jing anymore. I'll tell you, Yi Jing told me more lies than anybody else I've ever known. Yi Jing has a personality. It's very devious and very treacherous. And it feeds you just what you want to hear. And it's really spaced out and burned out more people than that I would care to name. You know, like like a friend is somebody who just doesn't tell you what you want to hear. A friend tells you what's true, really. You know, a toady is the old word for somebody who told you what you want to hear. The kings all had their toadies around them, you know, who told them what they wanted to hear. King said, "Am I the greatest king in the world?" "Yeah, you're the greatest king in the world." "Yeah." Well, that's what the I Ching does. It tells you what you want to hear, and it's not a true friend.
Yesterday, a full million of us in the Hippie Republic of China met in my room to debate this question. We threw Yi Ching out the window. We are now unanimous.
How sweet it is!
One time I really zapped it. I asked it if it was the devil, and it said yes. And then I asked it if it spoke for God and said no. It said, "I am a complete liar." I mean, that was in other words, I set it up. I set it up. I asked two questions simultaneously. And it said, I speak with forked tongue," is what it said. And then it said, "Oops, I didn't mean to say that." But it had already...
Then you get a paradox.
Oh, I watched a girl do this to it once.
I mean, that's the paradox.
So it's
lying when it says it's lying.
It's just, you know, it's just full of It's a crock is what it is.
You know, you have three coins that you throw when you play the I Ching, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and now to consult it, you throw the coins. And
sounds interesting.
What happens then is I'm doing the same thing but with cameras. Throwing three cameras at the same time, and that is providing for me the three separate images, and it's going to be in four parts. Mm-hmm. Three parts in New York, and then because I'm out here for the gathering of film, it's going to be, the fourth part is going to be here.
Phil Austin played Jack Love, adult filmmaker and son of a leather worker. For his bedroom theater, he talked about explicit films like The Nun Exposed and Blondie Goes to the Dentist. We even screened excerpts on the air, creating a suggestive soundtrack over a film projector effect. And just to show how supportive our listeners were, as well as how zonked, when Peter suggested that we should not be allowed to show these obscene films on listener-supported radio, the switchboard lit up with people protesting his outrageous call for censorship.
I believe primarily in getting away from the technical, cold, nasty things in our world and getting into something love, you know, a great deal of... I feel that there's a dullness evident in a great many young people, and I want to free people, get into love and things like that, you know.
Well, what is, for example, Our Friend the Giraffe?
Our Friend the Giraffe is a short film I made. It's one of my earliest films, but I think I was very interested to pick that up because it does involve love, the love of a man for a giraffe. And this seems, you know, right. I knew immediately I said that, you know, that people would laugh.
It's
because
ridiculous.
They think it's funny, you know. They don't understand that such a thing could possibly could be. And I want to explore all elements of love, you know, love between people, love between people and animals, you know, love between people and objects. Things like that.
There's not enough love in the world. There's not enough love between different political factions. There's not enough love between, for instance, the communist and the fascist in our society. There's not enough love between the older people, the younger people. There's not enough love between me and anybody. This is the only time I get to love anybody.
Did an entire film once on shoes. Right? The love of a man or woman for shoes, mm-hmm. or for giraffes. Mm-hmm. And a great deal, I'm what you might call a psychedelic filmmaker. I love psychedelics.
This is not a physical kind of a love relationship. It's just a guy has, what is he?
Well, that sort of depends on what country you're showing it in, how much they believe in.
Well, I was wondering, because yeah. In some of the information that your publicist sent over before the program, we had understood that there were several scenes in Our Friend the Giraffe, which had been excised from showing in this country.
Well, not privately, which is what I'm most interested in. My film, the other short film, The Nun, has had a tremendous vogue in private sale, what we call the theater of the living room. You know, people consider, well, no, this is something that has to come with television, bringing this program right here, you know, bringing life directly into people's homes. Why not films, too? Why not films for a home market instead of always in nasty theaters, you know, with people all in the dark and not looking at each other, all looking
it's
one
not,
direction.
It's not completely true, you know.
Ala introduced me to a culture very different from ours. For instance, when we went to a movie in the Soviet Union, you went to a kiosk to buy a ticket. But the movie was not necessarily in a theater. It might be a ballroom in an old hotel with wooden chairs, like where we saw a rather violent Polish film with Russian subtitles about diamond mining. So there I was, in the darkened ballroom theater, and when I sheepishly put my arm around her shoulder, she immediately removed my hand and placed it on one of her breasts. It was much more fun than watching movies at the Film Society at Yale, though I scored there, too. We were all over each other, and no one around us objected, mainly because they had their hands all over each other, too. There was no privacy anywhere else in their city, so these makeshift theaters became make-out rooms.
Talking about censorship, I think Jack's position is particularly relevant.
Right.
Why is that, Jack?
I've run into a tremendous amount of problems. It's very interesting what you mentioned about a woman's breasts, you know, not being able to show them, the most terrible beating scenes. And I've often wondered if you combine the two, if they get past American censors. You know, right. If you could show them enough violence and there was a naked woman in it, they might not even notice. You know, they'd just be sitting there going, oh, marvelous, more violence, let's put it on. But my films, you know, which don't have any violence, you know, completely filled with love,
All you need is love. All you need is love. All you need is love. Love. Love is all you need.
We wrote this piece based on the concept of people oppressed by power, any political authority, any governmental authority, any dictatorship, any kind, anybody telling you basically what to do and how to do it, just control. And I think that one of the first things we agreed on in our brainstorming sessions was that we would begin the record and end the record in a loop. I don't know if we decided exactly how we were going to do that, but I know that that was very appealing to us all. And this being the first project that we had ever really written together, you know, all of the other work that we did together was improvisational, so that we'd each come in with we'd agree on the assignment of what it was we were going to portray, and then each one of us would work independently to create a character or characters that would embody some aspect of the idea, and then we would all live on the radio reveal our characters to one another, and out of that would come usually some pretty entertaining interaction, always based on the art of put-on. And in fact, to me, the Firesign Theater in essence represents the art of put-on carried to the ultimate degree in terms of its theatricality or improvisation, because I remember that no matter how far out we would carry a premise when we were working on the radio, if we were tied into any phone lines and we could get input from the audience, we discovered that the audience would go way out there with us. As long as they bought the initial premise, we could take them as far into outer space as we wanted to. We could be as outrageous in the ideas and characters we were portraying as we wanted to be, and they believed us. Now, that was both a wonderful and terrifying revelation, because it showed me, at least, and I think you too, David, I can perhaps speak for all of us, it showed us the awesome power of the radio. It showed us the extent to which people were, well, either using drugs or just plain brainwashed, and how they would basically follow any line that you threw them. So a lot of electrician, to me, at least the flip side of the record, the main part of the story, comes out of that kind of thinking and a desire on our part to break the hold of that kind of thinking on the body politic, on the people who make up a nation or a country or a city or a neighborhood, so that they start thinking for themselves and realizing that they basically can appreciate a life of freedom if they choose to live such a life.
This show is about power.
Hello, Clive.
Ah, come on in, Chester.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Hey, you're just in time to help me check out this new model government.
Yeah?
Yeah, they just brought it down, and they say it explains everything.
Well, you know, it sure is big.
Hey, well, look over there in the left end. That's where you work, there in the Bureau of Western Mythology.
By golly, we're at proud service of the Lost Electricity Reclamation Agency, Senator.
Yeah, well, the LES is under the left... Well, it's...
I don't...
I think I'll just plug it in.
Oh, right? Well, listen, I'll just use this little plug right down here.
Not that plug, Chucko. See?
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, you got to plug in the female.
Yeah.
Listen to it. Teaches you, huh?
Yeah.
Half of what comes in here?
Must go out there.
Righto. Let's see what it does with this fine miniature boxcar of industrial coke.
Okay. Look at that.
That's
amazing.
Let's see. It's pumped from the Veterans Tap Dance Administration.
Goes up here to the Assistant Secretary of Leftovers.
Let's flop down to the Secretary of Covers.
Right. Now watch it go now. Around the Department of Spy.
obliged.
And, into the office of the Secretary of Failure himself, wouldn't you know? That's shoes for industry, Charlie.
And it's food for thought, you know, Mr. Brown?
Yeah, but we're talking about power, Chucko.
Well, I know you are. You wouldn't be here.
Oh, look at that.
Yes, sirree.
It heard the word power, and it responded just like we do.
You know, I try to think, what is the story of the canon? You know, what is this single story? And it has to do with power, don't you think?
God, you said power, and he responded.
Just like you.
Like they all do.
Yes.
That's why I connect the radio shows, the Let's Eat radio shows. Which
I would say power is right.
Also are dealing with the effect of power. And, of course, then we make a jump in the second group of the second chapter of Firesign would then be from about 73 onward to the end of the decade, 72, 73. And if you listen to The Giant Rat of Sumatra, of course, the electrician appears as an actual character or maybe just as a costume.
Or some electrician.
And that has to do with the pursuit of power. And as a matter of fact, Hemlock Stones pursues the electrician all the way back to the United States, to the acme of power, Mr. Acme, Jonas Acme and his company. I think they're the ones who make all of those things that Wile E. Coyote tries to
yes.
use. That's the same Acme, the giant Acme company. They made a terrible beer called Acme Beer. They were into everything, Jonas was.
And so, with the invention of the motor-operated pushover, man
and science
invented life here.
Today.
In the future.
Man, woman, and baby.
All is plugged into the grid of power.
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 Before the beginning, there was this power.
And the power was alone.
And it looked around, and it saw its opposite.
Which was off. And it screwed itself into its opposite.
And behold,
it turned them on. And their union grew all day.
Like a bridge.
And it grew.
And it grew.
And it grew. Until.
Why Drew?
Where does power, electrical power, come from? It comes from the willingness of people to allow themselves to be governed. So basically, the electrician figure represents a corruption of power, the madness of power. People who are of an authoritarian nature and like to rule and like to control and like to be powerful, enabled by other people to get away with it. And many of them go mad. And that's the genesis of the power-mad electrician. He wanted more energy, more power, and was willing to do anything to get it. And, you know, it's a metaphor, really, for the oil industry, the rapacious behavior of capitalists and all the rest of it. If you take your power into your own hands, then you become the electrician. And waiting for the electrician or someone like him asks, who is going to empower you to live your own life the way you want to live it? And how can you best accomplish that?